Eddy out of the shotgun, third and three. Arizona rushes six. Dump right. Caught Asiata. Turns it up 35-40 to the 45-50. Excellent play call and a first down for the Vikings. Palmer out of the shotgun takes the snap. And Daniil Hunter sacks him back at the 43. Daniil Hunter, the rookie from LSU, sacks the veteran and knocks the Cardinals out of field goal range. Third and goal from the 7. Teddy takes the snap, looks out to the right, swings it to the left, man wide open, touchdown Vikings! It's Mike Wallace with a touchdown. It's a 54-yard drive right hash. Big spot, snap, spot. Blair's right-footed kick is up and good! Teddy play action, he'll fire out to the left. To Ellison. Great play. 30, 35, 40. Ellison to the 45, to the 50. Angles back to the right. Shakes a tackle to the 35. Rhett Ellison with an explosive catch and run of 36 yards. The longest of his career. Palmer play action. He's hit and he's sacked by Arizona native Everson Griffin. Sacked back at the 10-yard line. Third and goal from the 10. Adrian the single set. Handoff Adrian on second and one. Stutter steps to the left. Runs to the first down to the 5. And he struts into the end zone. Touchdown Vikings! And that's Adrian Peterson's 100th regular season touchdown. And the Vikings grab the lead.
Welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshell, in Xfinity Studios at Winter Park. Producer Nate Vaughn is here. We apologize for getting the Wobcast up a little bit later than usual, but we were still hibernating from our quasi-bye week that we had over the past weekend following the Thursday night game. But we're here, and we're here to talk about that Thursday night game, a loss to the Cardinals, as well as the Vikings' upcoming game against the Chicago Bears, who we hope will have gone into hibernation by next Sunday after they dropped a home game to the Washington Redskins. But first, we go back to the Vikings' loss against the Cardinals. Following that game, we got some sound from coaches and players in the locker room, and here it is.
I thought our team resembled more of what I am used to seeing. We played with a lot of physicality, a lot of heart, a lot of effort. We didn't do enough things to win the football game, though. We had three fumbles. And we gave up some big plays defensively, which didn't allow us to win the football game. But Arizona's a good football team. Bruce is a good coach. Carson's a heck of a quarterback, and they do a great job. I thought they tried to execute the game plan that we could have in a short week against a good offensive football team. And it wasn't by any stretch perfect, but we played hard.
How tough is it to play like that and then lose like that?
Well, it was very tough, but we learned a lot, about ourselves today, and I think that's going to be the formula for us, to have some success, moving forward. We have to continue to have balance, and I think our guys did a great job competing, just have to clean some things up, eliminate some mistakes, and we'll be in a ball game like this again, and we're going to make sure we come out on top.
I don't know. Guys that came out ready to play, we came out focused. We had a great game plan, and guys stepped up at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, guys made plays out wide. Teddy did a great job of being poised and leading us and stepping his game up to a different level. And I tried to do what I could do in the run game on the ground. I got to give credit to Arizona defense. They did a great job of tackling. It was a couple that was just shoestring tackles, but some good tackles that helped them out a lot. So it was a playoff caliber team. At the end of the day, I feel like we'll be able to look back and see, hey, we was able to get things going, clicking on all cylinders, offensively. And kind of look at the things that hurt us, the turnovers, of course, too. Defensively, the guys play outstanding, giving us the opportunity to get the ball back and even things out. And you look at the two takeaways that we could have had, So we take our hat off to Arizona. They got us tonight, And, you know, we'll just learn from this and, you know, try to finish the season strong.
Our coaches do a great job of having people prepared. I don't care if you're in the practice squad. And it's a credit, more of a credit to the guys, you know, consistently being in the books and not sitting in meetings and drifting off. And, you know, because so much changes within a scheme week to week and during a season. I mean, you know, things morph into, you know, whatever. And you have to keep up with that. And I just thought it was, you know, so proud of those young guys to stay with it and be on their stuff and not let the moment be too big for them on the road here against a good football team, you know. I think we gave up 23 points to one of the better offenses. You know, it's not good enough, clearly, but I think it's a step back to where we want to be. Now, can we remain consistent and be that team for three more weeks? You know, that's what we have to prove.
Let's get right to it, the good and the bad from that loss to the Arizona Cardinals. Even though it was a loss, there were some good things. Remember, folks, this was a Vikings defense that was missing four starters for the game. Out of the game were Harrison Smith, Linval Joseph, Anthony Barr, and Andrew Sendejo. Yet the Vikings defense, with backups stepping up, still played well and held the Arizona Cardinals below several of their season-long averages, including in points per game and a lot of different passing categories. So you got to give guys like Anthony Harris, an undrafted rookie free agent who started and played in his first career game, you got to give him some credit. Terrence Newman playing out of position, our starting corner, played at safety in the game. You got to give Trey Waynes, who got his first start at cornerback, a lot of credit. Of course, Eric Kendricks is a rookie, so got to give those guys a lot of credit for stepping up. And you have to give Mike Zimmer and this defensive coaching staff a lot of credit for devising a game plan that those inexperienced players could execute, and a game plan that gave the Arizona Cardinals offense a few more fits than they're used to. So we don't want to end up feeling too happy about a loss, but we do want to recognize some of the good things that happened in the game, and one of the good things was the way the defense stepped up despite missing four very good players. Another good thing that happened was on offense. Teddy Bridgewater delivered a career-high 335 yards passing for Teddy, one touchdown, no interceptions, a high percentage night for Teddy. He was 25 of 36. It's no coincidence, folks, that Teddy had a career-high in passing yardage and perhaps had his best game of the season on the same night in which he was protected better than he had been in any game to this point. So when you protect Teddy Bridgewater, these are some of the things that can happen. He can get the ball down the field, he can pass for 300-plus yards, and he can have the Vikings in position to take down a very good Arizona Cardinals team on the road and on a short week. So bravo, Teddy Bridgewater, and a great job by the Vikings offensive line, running backs, and tight ends in protecting him. Let's go back to the defense. Another good thing we liked, we'll single out someone specifically, and that's Anthony Harris. Folks, this is a guy who is undrafted. The Vikings sign him as an undrafted free agent. They bring him along throughout the offseason program, bring him to training camp. He sticks around. He ends up not making the final 53, but gets onto the practice squad, sticks with the Vikings throughout the season. And when the Vikings needed someone to step in, Anthony Harris steps into not just playing in the game, but starting, and looked pretty good doing so. Credited by coaches with 10 tackles, second on the team, behind Chad Greenway's 11 in that game. He had one pass breakup, made a great break on a Carson Palmer pass at the end zone to cause an incompletion and break up what would have been a touchdown. So a very good job by Anthony Harrison. Is he a solution for the Vikings at safety? That's a question that's going to be asked all week. What will the Vikings do at safety? If you presume that Harrison Smith is back, who do you start next to Harrison Smith? Is it a healthy Andrew Sendejo? If Andrew Sendejo is not healthy, or if the coaches aren't pleased with his play, can you put Anthony Harris in the starting lineup? Or did you like what you saw from Terrence Newman at safety so you can play him there and slide Waynes into the starting lineup? So with the way Anthony Harris played and with the way Terrence Newman played at safety, the Vikings suddenly have some options at that position, a position that for a long time they've been struggling to find a consistent starter next to Harrison Smith. They now have some options there, so that's good news. Lastly, one thing we liked from the game, Blair Walsh connected from 54 yards. So you love seeing that, and he was perfect on his point after touchdown tries as well. So good to see Blair hit from 54. It's too bad he didn't get a chance to hit from 48 at the end of the game, because that is what it would have been had the Vikings had a chance to kick. Instead, Teddy Bridgewater is sacked and loses a fumble. If that play doesn't happen, or if Teddy just throws an incomplete pass there, Blair would have had a shot to tie the game at the buzzer from 48 yards. And with the way he's kicking the ball, I think he would have made it. What didn't we like in the game? Well, we didn't like the last play. Teddy Bridgewater sacked and fumbled as he's trying to get a few more yards to make it a closer field goal for Blair. That was too bad. The Vikings had a serious contender on the ropes but couldn't come through. We need to find ways to win those games, eliminate some of those late game mistakes, and the Vikings are going to be in position to win some close games at the wire rather than dropping some of these close games at the wire like they've done at Denver and like they did at Arizona. And lastly, a reason for the loss, -3 in turnover ratio. We did not like that. The Vikings defense not able to take the ball from the Cardinals, and the offense lost 3 fumbles on the night. So we don't like that. You're not going to win very many games when you're -3 in the turnover ratio, and you're definitely not going to win many games when you're -3 in turnover ratio and you're on the road and you're playing a team that's 10-2. So got to clean up the turnover problem as well. So where do the Vikings stand after the loss? Well, they're 8-5. With 3 games to go, the Vikings' run to the playoffs continues. Still in very solid position to get to the playoffs. They have games coming up against the Chicago Bears at home, against the New York Giants at home, and then they close the season at Lambeau Field. Don't look too far down the road, folks. Don't look at some of those clinching scenarios. Just worry about one thing. That is beating the Chicago Bears. Now, something to watch. If the Giants beat the Dolphins on Monday night, a game that will have concluded by the time many of you listen to this edition of the Wobcast, if the Giants win that game, the Vikings game against the Giants in Week 16 will be flexed to Sunday Night Football on NBC. So that could be kind of a cool storyline coming up in a couple of weeks, the Vikings and the Giants playing on Sunday night in prime time with playoff positioning on the line. A cool theme in all 3 of the remaining games for the Vikings, all cold weather games remaining on the schedule, with 2 home games against the Bears and Giants in the next 2 weeks, and then Week 17 being at Lambeau Field, and more likely than not, the wild card round game that the Vikings would have will also be in a cold weather environment, because it's either going to be at home, or it's going to be at Green Bay, or it could be at an NFC East opponent, the Washington Redskins, the New York Giants, or the Philadelphia Eagles. So more than likely, a 4th cold weather game coming up for the Vikings if they qualify for the postseason. If the Vikings win out, the Vikings win the division. It's that simple. By winning out and beating the Packers, they will go ahead of the Packers because of the tiebreaker. They will have a better division record than Green Bay. So the Vikings and Packers would have the same record. They would tie. You'd go to head-to-head. It would be split. And then you go to division record for the next tiebreaker, and the Vikings would have the advantage there. At the end of the day, the most likely scenario for the Vikings is a playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. Now, we don't want to look too far down the road and put the cart before the horse. We're going to keep our focus on the Chicago Bears. So we do that to help keep our focus on the Chicago Bears. We're going to go to Nate Vaughn, who is at the NFC North update desk, to give us a rundown of what happened to the Bears, the Packers, and the Lions while the Vikings had the weekend off. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Wobby.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Did you watch a lot of football over the weekend?
I did.
Yeah?
I enjoyed watching especially some of those bad weather games from the comfort of my couch.
Yeah, not being in the bad weather was nice. And I got to say, though, it is kind of weird to just sit all day and watch football and not have a game. That's kind of weird. I watched a lot of Bengals Steelers, physical, hard-hitting AFC North game. Thought that was a good game. And then, of course, I had my Washington Redskins, pennant and number one foam finger going. I was the Redskins' biggest fan. I was rooting for them to beat the Bears because I want the Bears to be not motivated when they come here on Sunday. Now, I still think they're going to be motivated to beat us because they want to spoil it for us, but I was happy to see the Redskins prevail at Soldier Field.
Yeah, Washington took care of business 24-21 against the Bears. The Bears now officially eliminated from playoff contention in the NFC.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not going to question any of the Bears' professionalism or their ability to get up for a game. I'm sure a lot of those guys, because they're professionals, they're going to give it their best effort. And let's be frank about it. They want to ruin our chances. I mean, we're a long shot to miss the playoffs. A lot of things are going to have to go wrong for us to miss the playoffs. But the first thing that could go wrong is us losing to the Bears, being division rivals, and having already beat the Bears. There's nothing that the Bears would like more than to come into our house and beat us. So we're going to get their best shot, even though they're eliminated from playoff contention. But there is something to be said for once you are mathematically eliminated, you wonder if some guys lose that edge. Of course, we hope more guys lose the edge than don't, but I have a feeling those guys are going to come in here and give us their best shot.
two other teams close to, if not now eliminated? I'm not totally sure. You might be able to answer this, but Detroit and St. Louis. Lions lost to the Rams 21-14. And in the notes here, you say, if a tree falls, dot, dot, dot. What does that mean?
If a tree, isn't it, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to see it, does it make a noise? You know, and that's my reference to two non-playoff teams playing each other, and you're really going to update us on that here at the NFC North update desk. But
there's only four teams to talk about in the NFC North.
All right, yeah. I didn't keep an eye on that game. I saw the final was 21-14. The Rams won. I think Aaron Donald had a couple of sacks, and the Detroit Lions, you know, a team that even when they're out of it, they can be a fun team to watch because they have Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson. So that's a fun group to watch. I saw Golden Tate scored a touchdown, so he's still doing his thing. And but, yeah, that game was inconsequential to the rest of the Vikings season.
Finally, the Packers holding serve at home against the Dallas Cowboys, 28-7. It was close for a while, pulled away at the end there. The Packers now in first place in the NFC North.
It was like the good old days. We were cheering for Matt Castle against the Packers.
That's true.
We've been there before. And it just didn't quite work out in our favor. That game was there for the taking for the Cowboys, I thought, particularly in the second half. Green Bay struggled in the third quarter and the early stages of the fourth quarter to put that game on ice and send the Cowboys packing. But eventually they did. And if you're a Packers fan, you have to love seeing Eddie Lacy get back in the groove like that. He was a monster for Dallas to stop. And you know, my theory on Green Bay is it's kind of like the free throw theory in basketball, where if you have a really good shooter who's cold and he can't hit, but you get a stupid foul on him and send him to the free throw line, all he's got to do is see the ball go in once or twice from the free throw line, and all of a sudden he's back in the groove. And I'm afraid that may be what happened to Green Bay when they got the Hail Mary victory against the Lions. It's like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to do something unbelievable. And now all of a sudden Green Bay might be rolling again. Even though their record may not say it and they've lost a bunch of games in the last month, I think Green Bay's a dangerous team right now, and especially once the playoffs start.
The Wobcast, now your home for basketball and football analogies.
That's what we do.
We'll talk about the Timberwolves in the later edition.
Right.
In the later week edition of the podcast.
That's right. Well, we're going to have Lindsay Young. We'll tell you more about her later, folks. But Lindsay Young used to cover the Wolves. She could probably drop some knowledge on us.
That's true. So, week 15 matchups, the Packers at 9-4 are visiting the Raiders at 6-7. This Sunday, the Lions at 4-9 are at the New Orleans Saints at 5-8. That'll be on Monday Night Football. And the Chicago Bears at 5-8 at your Minnesota Vikings 8-5 this Sunday at noon.
Well, we hope the Raiders can use the momentum that they may have generated from a win at Denver to propel them to victory over the Packers. The Lions and the Saints will watch because it's Monday Night Football, and I watch all Monday Night Football games, and I love the way John Gruden does his thing, so I guess I'll end up watching that game even though it's inconsequential to us. And then, of course, we hope the Bears go into hibernation against the Vikings. You and I will be at TCF Bank Stadium for that game Sunday at noon.
All right, we'll move on to a look at your over-under results this week. Entered the week 17-18. Going to make that push for a 500 record? You think you did it?
No.
No?
I have a bad feeling.
Yeah, you're a good guesser, though, in that regard.
Right. I wish that could count on my record. See, I'm generally positive for the Vikings. This just in, I'm positive toward the Vikings. And so when we lose a game, it's probably not good for my over-under record.
That's fair. Let's start with Vikings interceptions. We put the over-under at 0.5, so 0.5. You took the over. You thought we'd get one. Well, technically, we did, but it got called back.
Oh.
Trey Waynes had that pick.
He did.
The play was called back. I forget what the penalty was.
It was a defensive offsides of some kind, neutral zone infraction or encroachment of some kind. Yeah.
Then you look at Xavier Rhodes' pass breakup that a lot of people just automatically consider a pick six. I don't know if it would have been that, but definitely a good play on his part. He looked like he kind of wished he had picked it off too.
Yeah, and I think his hand was hurting, so we'll give him a pass on that. Anthony Harris had his hands on a pick at the goal line, but the one that that was the biggest tease in this one was the Trey Waynes one. First career start, gets his hands on an interception, but it's taken away because of an offsides penalty, so I lose on this one.
Right. But you can't be too mad about the way the defensive backfield played.
No. I mean, if you really look at it, the Cardinals had 36% of their passing yards on two plays.
Yeah.
And 14 of their 23 points off of two plays. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, you really got to give this defense and this secondary a lot of credit for the way they played, playing down four starters, including both safeties, and then playing a guy out of position, and then playing two rookies as starters in the secondary, not to mention a rookie middle linebacker. Pretty good performance against an offense like that.
We'll look at Arizona's defense now. Both of us pretty big fans of Honey Badger mm-hmm. on their defensive backfield. We put the over-under at 1.5 tackles for loss for him, knowing that he can come up and make a lot of plays in the backfield. You took the over. Good for the Vikings, you were wrong. Right. He had one tackle for loss. When I checked, it had 11 tackles. I don't know what the coach's tally would have been, but it was a good game on his part, but just not racking up those TFLs.
Yeah, what I'm guessing happened was Norv was listening to the Wobcast, heard the segment of Over Under where I said Honey Badger would have more than 1.5 tackles for loss, had the offensive line and tight ends listen to that segment, and then motivated them to not let Honey Badger do it.
Anything we can do to help,
yeah,
Coach.
That's what we're here to do.
That's right. Finally, Jerick McKinnon touches. We saw an increase in receiving and rushing mm-hmm. touches for Jerick McKinnon the past few weeks. We thought that might continue. We put the over-under at 8.5 touches. We thought it'd be a pretty busy game for him. Turned out it was basically the opposite. He had one reception for 8 yards. It was kind of the Adrian Peterson show again.
It was, and that's good. It was a primetime game. The last time the Vikings kind of played in a primetime environment was against the Green Bay Packers when they were the Fox game of the week at 325. Technically not primetime, but it pretty much was because 90% of the country got that game. So for all intents and purposes, it was a primetime game, and the Vikings ended up going away from Adrian. Whether it was by choice or by game circumstances is up for debate. I think it was because of the circumstances of the game, but at the end of the day, Adrian did not get a bunch of touches the last time they played in primetime. That was not the case against the Cardinals. Adrian got the ball a bunch, and as a result, Jerick McKinnon did not get the touches that some anticipated he might get. And so I'm glad I was under on that. I'm not against Jerick McKinnon getting more touches. I think that's great when he does. I think he's very good in the two-minute situation for us. If we're ever in two-minute situations, I think McKinnon should be on the field as much as possible. But in this game, I thought it was going to be a heavy Adrian Peterson game, and it wound up to be that way.
So you got the under on that last one, but missing the first two. You're finishing 18-20 so far with 2 weeks left. 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I can't count anymore. Well, long season.
Right. Yeah, we're getting to the end of it, though.
3 weeks remaining in the regular season, and then whatever playoff aspirations we might have. We'll obviously continue those over-unders.
Let's take a look at that playoff picture. Nate Vaughn has provided me with a sheet of paper that's got the AFC and the NFC standings on it, and also teams who are in the hunt. A few things. I mean, you guys all know the playoff picture generally by now. You know the Panthers are undefeated. They're the one seed in the NFC. You know the Patriots are 11-2. They're back on top of the AFC. But a few interesting things about the playoff picture. The number one thing that stands out to me, Nate, and you know the Kansas City Chiefs very well because you used to be a part of that organization, but your Kansas City Chiefs, my man, are on fire right now.
It's a good thing we played them earlier in the season, don't
yes,
you think?
That it didn't look like a quality win at the time, but now it sure does.
Yeah, we'll definitely take it now.
8-5, they've won 7 straight. They were 1-5 at one point in this season. Now they are 8-5, and we just looked at the standings. They're 2 behind the Denver Broncos, which they have a chip chair chance to win that division. But even if they don't win the division, they look like a surefire team to make the playoffs. But the Jets are also 8-5 somehow, by the way. The Jets are 8-5. I don't know how that happened.
Very quietly.
But credit to them. First-year head coach, Todd Bowles, getting the Jets to 8 wins through 13 games. A very good accomplishment. And what's amazing about that, the Chiefs and the Jets at 8-5 are the 5th and 6th seed in the AFC. That means the Pittsburgh Steelers, which if we did our power rankings just for fun earlier in the studio, we had the Steelers like 5th or 6th in the entire league. They're not in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, it's crazy the difference between the two sides of the NFL.
And the Steelers are playing as well as anyone in the NFL right now, save the Carolina Panthers, maybe, and the Patriots. I mean, the Steelers are playing as well as anybody. They're not in the playoffs right now in the AFC field, which just tells you how crazy deep the playoff field is. So I do think the Steelers are going to get in, but they're probably going to have to win out to do so. So that's the crazy thing to notice in the AFC. In the NFC, speaking of surging teams, how about the Seattle Seahawks?
We did play them at the wrong time, as opposed to the Chiefs, when we played them at the right time.
Yeah, I think they came into our game having won 2 straight, beat us for 3 straight, and they just put a whooping on the Baltimore Ravens. And they're now 8-5. And
Doug Baldwin all of a sudden looks like the best receiver in the NFL.
We're going to start calling him Megatron.
Yeah.
He's got 8 touchdowns in the last 3 games.
That's insane.
Like, the Cardinals I mean, they beat us, and it's a dang good thing for them they beat us, because now they're 11-2. But the Seahawks are 3 games behind the Cardinals with 3 games to play. And oh, by the way, they play each other in Week 17. So the Cardinals are at the Eagles this week. Suddenly, a very important road game for the Arizona Cardinals, with the Seattle Seahawks surging up the standings right now. So that, to me, is the thing that sticks out in the NFC. And then the Vikings are in the 6th seed right now. So if the playoffs began right now, the Vikings would be at Green Bay in the wild card round, which would mean, if that is how it ends up happening, the Vikings will play at Green Bay in back-to-back weeks. What are your thoughts on that, playing at the same opponent in back-to-back weeks to close the season and then to go into the playoffs? Kind of a weird thing.
Probably like our chances in one of those, right?
I would.
50-50?
I think so. I do like our chances in one of those. In fact, it happened in 2012, and we did go 1-1 in those games. We had a win and in scenario in Week 17. Of course, the Vikings won that game. Adrian Peterson ran his way to the MVP award, but then the Packers prevailed the following week in Green Bay. What's different about this one is both games would be in Green Bay. I think there's something to be said to look, not to look too far down the road, but like, if Green Bay wins that game, then the next game will be at Green Bay as well. There's something to be said for it being a pesky task, if you're the Packers, to have to beat a team for the third time in a season and to have to do it in consecutive weeks. There's something a little bit pesky about that, but they're the Green Bay Packers, and the road through to the division goes through them, and they have no reason to be scared of anyone, especially with that quarterback. But there's just something pesky about having to beat a team 3 times. But that's down the road. That's putting the cart before the horse. What's up next for the Vikings is a game against the Chicago Bears. Speaking of the Bears game, in the late week edition of the Wobcast, we're going to go into a deep dive of that Bears game, and part of it is going to be introducing Lindsay Young to all of you. We just hired her on as a full-time writer and editor for our publications. She's covered the Vikings and other Minnesota pro sports teams for various blogs, and now she's going to be covering the Vikings and the Vikings only for Vikings.com. So we're excited to have her aboard. And in the next edition of the Wobcast, which will be posted later this week, we're going to have Lindsay Young on as a guest to introduce her, have her talk about herself, have her talk about what she's looking forward to covering, and just have you guys get to know her a lot better. In the meantime, don't forget to send us your emails and tweets, your thoughts, your questions. We want to hear them, and we feature them in every late week edition of the Wobcast. We feature an email or a tweet from one of you all so that we can get a pulse on what you guys are thinking and answer all of your questions. We encourage you to submit your emails and tweets to us, either to the Vikings official account at Vikings, to mine at Wobby, or go to Vikings.com, find the Monday morning mailbag. You'll find my email address on there, and you can send me an email. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Wobcast. This was the early week edition of the Wobcast. The late week edition of the Wobcast is going to come up later in the week. We're going to take a deeper dive into the Vikings and the Bears, a huge game for the Vikings as the season is hitting its final stretch. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshall. Until later in the week, we'll talk to you guys later. So, yeah, I stop.